Okay, fine. So now that we've done the overview of some of the Shittot on Sura, which took a week, we will now actually see it. Now, it's amazing that Yerushalmi doesn't talk about it that much, but we will see that even in the little that Yerushalmi does talk about it and the Mefarshim and the Mishnah, we will get some new positions here, and the Gruz position should shock you to your core. Hopefully. Yes, it's the inverse of Tosas, yes. Exactly. But it's really quite surprising, because, you know, he sort of has to ignore... But anyway, we'll see. Fine. So let's... Good, so let's get to it. So, Perek Zayin Mishnah Aleph. Okay, we're going to read through the Mishnah. We're focusing on what in the Mishnayot is Zayin Gimel, but in the Yerushalmi, it's all one big unit. I want you to think about why this is a unit, because it is quite surprising that it's a unit. When we finish this, if you want to spend one day on dealing with the rest of this halacha, specifically the Isser to do business with non-kosher food, I'm happy to do that. I've given shir on that. I can do a one-off. That the way you're going to know that I can give you a shir that's short, that will give you the tamtzit and not get too much, is if something I gave in a lay context in Toronto, right, then I boiled down the essence of it into a 45-minute lunch and learn, right? So then, which I happen to. So I have it in two pages translated, right? Everything, you know. Good. So it was one of my early lunch and learns at Zeifman's. So, Klal Gadol Amru B'Shviyat. Now, this should be deceptive to you, because, you know, we have two Prakim and Shviyat, which both say big rule. Big rule! This is the principle. Seventh and eighth Prakim of Shemitah, because, as we've already noted, that's where you always talk about the most important thing is buried in the middle of the Masechta. Fine. Klal Gadol Amru B'Shviyat. Kol Shehu Ma'achal Adam. Anything which is human food, animal food, or a dye, and if you leave it in the ground, right, it rots. Yesh lo shviit, it has the status of kedushat shviit, uledamav, and its money, which is the next major sugya we're going to have to do when we sort of finish a bunch of the eighth parak, but we have to get to the sugya eventually. Ula damav, and it's money, meaning if I sell Kobe beheter or beisser in orange, which is kadosh b'kedusha shviit, the money is now kadosh. And now if Kobe takes that money and buys a banana, the banana is kadosh b'kedusha shviit. Sure. Fine. I was just giving an example, but the point is, but an orange is an example of the type of thing that has kedusha. Yes. So is a banana. So is an apple. So is a eggplant. So is a tomato. Yes. But not fully transitive. It's a very weird transitive because it goes like this. As we'll see, if I sell an orange to Kobe, so now the orange remains kadosh. The money is kadosh. If Kobe then takes the money, whoever has the money, wherever the money is right now. I don't remember who had the money. I had the money because I gave you an orange. I have the money. Right. I have the money. I go buy a banana. The banana is now kadosh. But let's say I sell the banana. Now that banana is not kadosh and the money is kadosh. Oh, it's only the first and last. Okay. Right? First and last. It loses its kedusha. The original thing, right? Let's say I bought a banana which is not kadosh. I bought a banana from Chutz Laaretz. So it becomes kadosh, right? But if I sell that banana, it loses its kedusha. The original orange stays kadosh and the last thing I buy is kadosh, but everything in the middle is not. Correct. And then when I sell a banana, the money becomes kadosh, and the banana is not kadosh. And if I buy grapes, the grapes become kadosh. So now the orange and the grapes are kadosh.
What? When the kedusha switches from one thing to the next, doesn't really sound like it's real kedusha.
Well, we'll see.
Sounds like designation.
What do you mean?
Why? But the original one stays kadosh.
No. Talking about in regards to the second, the last thing.
Well, both of them are kadosh. Anyways, that's what we'll get there. Fine. So the nafka mina, right? The nafke mina, the implications of something being kadosh are one is the money can become kadosh. Two, yesh lo biur, there is an obligation of biur, which as we mentioned before is a machloket, which means that as long as there are apples in the field, you are allowed to take them to your house and you're allowed to eat them. When there are apples not in the field anymore, then you have to do biur. What is biur? Machloket rishonim again, destroy or rehefker. Thank you. Very good. Uledama of beer and the money will also be beer. The Aze Zet. Either
cut it up or give it away.
you, well, whatever you do with it, right? Destroy it or, you know, re-hefker it. The Ezezeh, so what plants count? So now we'll just get the list. Let's get it out. Ze, Ale, Shel, Luf, Hashote. I don't know if you bothered looking what all these things are.
Oh, onion.
Did you?
What is it?
The wild onion.
A wild onion. Good. Okay. What else? Here, I will. It, by the way, in case you ever want, the real expert in these, but I'm not torturing you by making you read it. What? No, no. They might quote it. The real expert was a professor named Yehuda Felix, who wrote very, very long books on botany and zoology in Tanakh, and then the Mishnah, and then, like, goes on forever. What? Long. Very long. They just and he has a separate volume just on Shviat, just dealing with all of this. So I debated spending the money and buying it this year, and I'm like, no, it's really expensive. It's like very... It's many volumes. Wait, let me see. I'll look it up. Felix. Yehuda Felix. Let's see how many volumes there were. Okay, here, according to Wikipedia, there was Kilai Zarim Veharkava, Mesechet Kilayim, Mishnah Tosefted Rushalmi Leprakim Aluf Ubet. So one book on the first two prakim of Kilayim. Then Hatzomech Vahachai BaMishnah, right, which is plants and animals in the Mishnah. Another book, Hachai BaMishnah, just on animals. Marod HaMishnah. Chai v'tzomech b'torah, ha-chaklut b'eretz Yisrael b'mei ha-mikra, ha-mishnah v'atamud, ha-chaklut b'eretz Yisrael b'tkufat ha-mishnah v'atamud, teva v'eretz b'tanach, mishnah shvi'id, olam ha-tzomech b'mikra, perek zra'im, tzimchei ha-tanach, chazal shir ha-shirim, tosevet shvi'id b'stei ilan. Wow, he had a whole book on the first perek of Shemitah.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Masechet Masrot, and then another one on, he had three books just on Shemitah. Yerushalmi Shvi'id. But it's many, 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 many thousands of pages. You could also look on the Mishnah Eretz Israel, Safrai, who does a lot of work on this. Safrai, yeah. Mishnah Eretz Israel is a fascinating set. It's a modern academic parish on the Mishnah, written by a father, son, and daughter. It's a little team of three academics, and they wrote a running commentary on all of Shots. It's like my dream come true. Like the little, what? Right, exactly. It's Shmuel Safrai, Zev Safrai, and Chana Safrai.
What's the actual description of like what the fruits are in the Gemara or whatever? Like, how did he research that? How does this research that?
You have to read the book.
Names.
Right? The most controversial, obviously, in the entire 10,000 pages that he wrote was his claim that Shibboleth Shu'el is not oats. Right, it's two road barley. No, that he was the one who he was
oh,
the one who
the one
he
that.
Is the one. Yeah. No. Okay, fine. So then what do we get? So what are examples? Ale, haluf, hashote. So these are wild onion type things, right? Ale hadandina. Sure, right? I'm looking now at the Sfaria translation. They translate it as the leaf of cataract. I have no idea what a cataract is, okay? Haulshin, which are endive, or something like that. Hakreshin, which are leeks. Vaharigila, which is... Exactly, portulaca. Yes, I don't know what that is. The netzach halav and yes, that thing. Umachel behema. Sure, right. I mean, you can eat orchid, and it does taste like that. I mean, have you ever had orchids?
I mean, we grow them, we don't eat them.
What, you've never been? Okay, you guys have been to like Greg's or whatever, right? You ever see sakhlav? Sakhlav is orchid pudding. Hot pudding drink thing. So, if you go to any of the coffee, Sakhlav, right? Or they, right? Is, anyway, you go to Greg's, you go to Aroma, that one of the hot drinks they have is Sakhlav. It's like a thick pudding-like consistency hot drink made of orchids. No, it's like a drinky puddingy. It is the weirdest taste. I taste it once. It's like they put like, it's, orchid pudding with like cinnamon on top. It's very odd. Yes. Anyways, umaychal behema. Okay, guy, fine. And then animal food. Vachochim vadardarim uminatzovim svichei istis vikotza yeshlam tefilim and tria yeshlam beer lebam beer. Right? So then what are these food? Animal food, thorns, thistles, and dying matters are the aftergrowths of woad and matter. I don't know what that means. Right? Anyways, all these things are kadosh b'kizu shviat. Fine? Right? Then the next mission of od klal acher amru is another rule. Right, anything which does not have all these qualities, right? So it's still it's kadosh b'kizu shviat, but has no chiyuv beer, right? Meaning things that can be left in the soil, right? If they're edible, but they're left in the soil, so they have kedusha, but because they stay all year round in the soil, there's never a time when they're not in the field, and therefore the only thing they don't have is beer, right? What goes in this category? Iker halofa shotev, iker adam denava akravin v'chal v'tzin v'buchria u'minatzovin apua v'arichpa yesh lem shviat l'demein shviat en lem bir v'lodemein bir. Okay, so these are whatever, the wild loof, the root of the cataract. I have it translated here as scolopendrium. I have no idea what that is. I have no idea. Fine. I don't know what that is. Romero Omer, Dmehim Idbarma Rosh Hashanah. No, the money has to be gotten rid of by Rosh Hashanah. Amrulayan, Ain Bior Kavachomer Ledmehan. And then, right, we have, there's this fascinating machlokas. Romero says the money does have beer, even though the fruit itself does not. And they say, no, the money is a derivative. And when we come to Dmeh Perish, we will come to it, okay? The only reason I'm reading through this whole thing is because the author of the Yerushalmi, or the organizer of Yerushalmi, thought that this is apparently one big unit with Schora. So we got to think about why that is. Klipe Rimon Vanetshalo. So the peels of pomegranate. Klipe and the blossom. Klipe Agozim Valaginim. Agalinin. What? The peduncle? There you go. I remember, this was like a thing when I was in yeshiva, I remember. Like, there were all these weird words that no one uses. It was like, remember one of my friends was very into, you know, sometimes the Gemara talks about those things that you carry people on, like, on your shoulder, like chairs at the shoulder. He insisted on calling it by its actual name, which is a palanquin. Yeah, like all these random words. Yeah. Yes. So, yesh lem shviat l'dmein shviat, hatzaba... Right, and then, okay, guys, fine. So then the Mishnah says, Hatzaba, so one who dies it, so Veya Le'atzmo, can die things for himself, Velo Yitba B'Schar, but not for pay. She'ein Osin Schora B'Perot Shvit, because you don't do business with Shemitah produce. Now, this is, right off the bat, extremely odd. Because, you know, if I'd asked you, if I want to talk about schora, what would the paradigmatic schora have been?
Selling,
thank you. You know, selling. Or something, right? Instead, the Mishnah says... Oh, very good. But amazingly, the entry point of schora for the Mishnah is not selling. It's dying something for somebody else. Oh, and once we're talking about that, right, if you look at all the Mepharshim, they say, why are we talking about this? Oh, because it's Schora. I mean, yes. Right? And then, and this is what's, right, sometimes you got to look at the Mishnah and just say, wow, the organizational principle that you have here, either it's just bad or there's something deep and conceptual here, because I'm shocked. Because what's the next line? So, Schora, as we talked about for a week, is, you know, a relatively important halachic topic. And then, without missing a beat, the Mishnah says, oh, I just mentioned the word schora and the issue of selling perot shviat. Let me tell you other things you can't do business with. Oh, yes, let's not focus on the important thing in, you know, mesechet shviat. Let us now jump. And this is, by the way, the primary source in all of Shas for this halachic topic, which is, I kid you not, right? Not, by the way, in the Prakim that talk about Kashrus, which are in Chulin, right? The main sugyas of Kashrus are in Chulin and in the end of Avodah Zarah, right? But mostly Chulin. No, it doesn't appear there. I mean, the main sugya is not there. The main sugya of selling non-kosher things is, as I would say, an afterthought, except it takes more room than the primary topic, in the middle of the seventh parak of Shviit. So it says, v'lo b'vacharot, v'lo b'trumot, v'lo b'nevelot, v'lo b'trefot, right? You can't sell a b'char, or, right, meaning a firstborn animal, which is kadosh, not truma, not nevela, which is an animal. What's the difference between nevela and trefa? Nevela is one that dies without shechita. Trefa is one that has one of the 18 simanei trefa, which means that it is not, that Chazal deemed it not to be able to live a year. Okay? V'lo bishkatzim, v'lo biramasim, and not bugs, creepy crawly things. V'lo yehyeh, and then, without blinking, we then switch back to Schor of Perichviyet. V'lo yehyeh lokeach yirakot sadeh umocher bashuk, and don't buy vegetables in a field, or of a field, and sell it in the market. Aval hu locate uvno mocher al yado, but you can pick, and your son can sell on your behalf. Lakach me'atzmo vehotir, and if you have left over for yourself, mutar limochra.
Why is Yehei necessary there? It makes it seem like it's a voluntary sort of thing. Okay, so.
Meaning what?
When it says lo Yehei lokeach yirakot, a person shouldn't have done that.
No, I don't think that's. I don't think that's what Yehei means.
I think that would pick up from here.
Yeah. Okay, so. We look at this Mishnah, and now, how many things strike you as odd about the presentation of Schara? Right? Meaning, you look at this, and now you say, first of all, you look at it, and you're like, okay, I mean, I don't know. I just spent a week on Schara. Maybe I'm just biased because I spent a week on Schara. But, like, I thought this was an important topic, you know? No, it's like, I mean, you know, whatever, right? It's like an afterthought. I don't even know what it's an afterthought of exactly. How did we get here again? Oh, right, we were talking about dyes as an afterthought of Michael, other Michael Behem, but we said also, by the way, things that are dyes are colored because they're Shviat. Oh, and, you know, once we're talking about dyes, not you shouldn't sell dyes. No, we're not talking about, you shouldn't dye things for other people because that's Schora. Oh, Schora? You're talking about Schora? Don't sell Bechorot or Trumot? Oh, okay. Oh, right. We were talking about Schora and Shviat. Let's go back to that. Right. Don't sell it and pick it, but your son can.
I mean, that says nothing about not selling.
Oh, but if you have leftover, you can.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, right, I look at it and you're like, okay, well, what is the, I mean, what are you telling me? What exactly? Okay, so. Right. Oh, good. So, right, you look at it and you're like, there has to be. I mean, you have to be teaching me something, or this is just a very odd organizational structure, right? So we got to figure out, like, what is the connection?
We lost the Gemara that we're in between.
It's not a Gemara. It's a Mishnah. Right? It's a missing. There's a whole Masechta in the middle. You just didn't know. No, that's not how it works. Erase it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So first of all, Kobe says, wait a second.
Don't say that.
No, so Kobe first of all says, wait a second. Right? The fact that the Gemara, the Mishnah, picks up on, right, presents Schora paradigmatically not only as selling, but rather as working on behalf of somebody else with Perishvi. It already should tell us that the understanding of Schora is broader than we thought.
Or it's a different thing.
Or it's different than we thought.
No, this is a different type of Schora.
I'd rather say it's broader.
What?
It's a different type of Schora.
Fine, that's another way of saying it's broader, which is that there's different types of Schora.
Yeah.
Right? Which means Schora count, right? Now, so right off the bat, the fact that it does force us to say that Schora seems to be a broader, right? Conceptually, it's not just buying and selling. The fact that the classic case, not just a case, but the classic case is apparently not buying and selling, should give you some pause in terms of understanding Schora.
Well, it seems like you're selling, like, it's not saying that you're selling something physical, but you're selling, like, something that you're doing, right? So considering that as under the categorical of selling.
Good. So David says, well, maybe it's even what you're doing. But that's a little bit unclear, right? Meaning, you're selling, let's clarify it, right?
I think
You're selling what you're doing, but why is that problematic?
The point is a transaction of...
Oh, wait. So why is it a transaction?
Because they're buying something that you are providing.
Ah, very good. So what would happen if I switched it, right? Let me just tweak it a little bit, and then you tell me what it is. And this is actually what the post can deal with, but this distinction is actually very important. David says that the connection between what I'm doing and what I'm giving you, right, there is a transaction that somehow relates to my labor but also relates to the object, right? Now, that's important because if it was only labor, then it would be hard to, right? So what case do you think, if you wanted to isolate it practically or conceptually, what case would isolate whether what David is saying is true?
I have this dye. I have this fabric. Can you dye my fabric?
Very good. Exactly what Mordechai says, right? Which is, what makes this case a case of schora is that I have the dye, and I'm dyeing it for you, so therefore I'm selling you labor and something with kadosh b'kedushas fiat. But if Mordechai comes to me and says, Rabbi Zering, I know that because you're a secret billionaire, right? It's because, not because of your chinuch business, it's because of your, right? It's because of your textiles, right? I have this dye, you are an expert, I will pay you, but here's the dye, right? Here is the... here are the clothes I want you to dye. Can you?
So that we were talking about before is the Duraisa level. This is the Durabana
level. Oh, well, before don't get so messy yet. Yeah, wait. Fine. Okay. So, right, we're going to have to analyze that question, right? Specifically, what is it about Sora where it doesn't seem to be that you're paying for labor, right? Yeah. It's a paradigmatic case, but despite
the problem seems to be that you're doing that they're paying for the outcome of your labor.
Right. Right. That there seems to be something here about the fact that they're paying for the outcome of your labor, but in some way.
But
that's what you've got to figure out. Is the problem the labor when the labor is attached to a product? Or is it not really about the labor, or is it both? Right? We gotta define it, right, to figure out why is this the case?
Would a case be where you pay somebody to harvest your fruits for you?
Oh, and what's the nafka mina? Very good. What would happen if I paid someone else to harvest something behefker? Right? 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 I said, listen, come with me, right? Kobe, come with me. We're going to go to that orange. There's a lemon tree I see right there, right? Every day I pass it, I'm like, what? It's right there. Every day you walk up the stairs, there's a lemon tree. I want lemons, but I am vertically challenged. Right? The lemons are free because it's Shemitah, but I will, right? I'll pay you, not for the lemons, but I'll pay you. Pick it because, you know, I can't reach. Right. So what am I doing? Am I paying for labor? Is it problematic? Because it's, right? Okay. So we got to analyze that. Then we got to say, right? That's one question. Again, just to notice the oddity just in the Mishnah, right? Then the other question that really jumps out at me when I read the Mishnah is, okay, we spent the last week trying to figure out what the nature of the Yishus Chora is. And everything we've talked about is local to Shviat, right? All these Svarot in Shviat. And then the Mishnah apparently shatters my dream of a beautiful, smooth, right, category that is all about Shemitah and says, oh, you're not allowed to sell, you're not allowed to do business with the Parish Shviat, you know, just like Truma B'char Shkatz and Ramas. And then without like missing a beat, it goes back to, and it's perfectly fine for you to have your son sell on your behalf, and right? It goes right back to Shemitah. So here's the problem, there's some sort of link between the Yisur Schora of Perush Shviat and the Yisur Schora of Bechor Truma, right? Now, you could punt on it and say, the Mishnah is a work that's meant to be easily remembered, and therefore there's no conceptual link between them at all. It's just like, you know, they're all about selling stuff. So, like, you know, we're talking about selling stuff, and the Mishnah is sort of doing stream of thought, right?
Use the word schora.
Why are they in the middle between?
Very good. So, Kobe says, I mean, that doesn't seem to work here, because last I checked, that is not how you make things easy to remember, which is Shemitah aside, which is three times the length of the actual point, finished, bracketed by more Shemitah, right? It points to a conceptual link in some way, shape, or form. And then you look at it and you say, aha, and that conceptual link would be what? Right? Would be what exactly? What? Oh, very good. Very good. So now you see why I said looking at the Mishnah is going to get very important, very messy, very quickly. So, as we've talked about before, very good. So, some of these are very suggestive because we've talked about it. We said in the fourth parak and in the beginning of the eighth parak, there are indications that Shemitah produce might be kadosh, and we spent way too much time figuring out what does kadosh mean? What does it not mean? Right? Is it really kadosh? Is it holy? Or is it designated, but not really holy? And everything's in asmachta, and erase all gemaras to the contrary that make it sound like it's kadosh, and all that stuff. But now, the people who want to say it's kadosh will say, aha, I have good evidence that maybe Isser Schora itself is a function of the fact that Shemitah produce is what? Wait. And the evidence for that would be that the first things that are prohibited along with Shemitah are
things that are kadosh,
Bechor and Truma, where the limitations on doing business with them seem to be a function of Kedusha, right? They seem to be a function of Kedusha. So then you would look at it, you would say, aha, so maybe the reason I can't do Schora b'Peir Shvi'et is because Peir Shvi'et are kadosh, and in some sense what we learn from other areas of things that are kadosh is that merchandising, commodifying certain things that are kadosh is problematic. It is a violation of their kedusha. Look, right, evidence.
It's all about designation.
One second. Now this would work for about two words, right? And then Mordechai says, "But wait a second. I mean, that's very nice. But when was the last time you heard of the very holy pig and the very holy and the very holy hunted deer that you shot in the head and?" Right? Or the very holy spider or the very holy toad, right? You know, Shkatsim, Ramasim, Nevela, Trefa, you know, the holy McDonald's, right? I mean, right? So then you've got to start doing mental gymnastics. So you go, so what could you do? Wait, what could you do?
Everything there has a specific designated use or not use that it has.
Okay, well, let's start for the most. One second. So let's start with the least conceptually glot, right? You could go back to it and say, listen, okay, Truma and Bechor are conceptually linked to Shemitah. And you know, once we're talking about selling multiple things are problematic, so then we're already in the stream of thought. So we talk about other things, but there's no conceptual link. Ignore it. No. It's not there. It's not important. It's just for memory. You could do that if you wanted to, right? Or you could say, you could say, it's not about Kedusha, it's about designation. Very good. Yeah, okay. Pray tell, explain that for me.
They all have certain uses or non-uses.
Oh, that is the most... Okay. Josh, you have now reduced words to, right?
If you sell them to somebody else, you won't be sure that...
Everything has a use. Well, I don't understand. Everything has a designation.
No, specific halachos to them that can or can't Shkatsim be done.
They can't be used for stuff. You can't use
them. Look, those are designated for non-use, and those are designated for use.
And if you sell them, you can't be sure the other person's going to not do it.
I don't know what you said in the first half with the designation. I honestly don't know what the words that came out of your mouth meant. I'm sorry. You have to come up with a better formulation. I honestly don't know. They're all designated. That's very Aristotelian. Is everything, if you study it from the ground, you realize that it has an essence and you will find it's arete. Okay, I mean, thank you, right?
Yeah, designated mysteries.
I don't even know anything about the Greek, right? But if you know anything about Greek philosophy, the words that are used to describe the purpose of man, right, like justice, don't really mean justice. They mean something more like excellence at doing what you were supposed to be doing. That's like the Greek philosophy. It's like, right, we're not justice, it's arete.
Arete is like a hero.
It's, anyway, if you look at the introduction to that little book, The Greek Philosophers by whatever, Guth, whatever. He has a discussion of this, of the actual word in the Greek. So what you just said sounded to me very Greek, not in the sense I didn't understand, but in the sense that, I mean, I didn't, it's but in the sense, yeah, in the sense, but yeah, it's all Greek to me in the sense that that sounds like something that I could finagle in a Aristotelian way, if I really felt like it.
It's a derivative story to make sure.
But the second thing you said, right, I did understand, right? The second thing you said is, wait a second, right? The second thing you said is, wait a second, maybe the Issachar in all of these is because by selling it, there's a problem because you might lead to someone misusing, which either means misusing because you're violating Kedusha or eating when it's not kosher or whatever. Now, pause. Only Josh can talk now. Josh, is there any conception of Schora you could think of that might have drawn its inspiration from the particular formulation that you just gave to this Mishnah? That we've already seen. We haven't seen all of them yet.
It would be a Derabanan level, for sure.
Which of the formulations that we've seen might have been inspired by that read of this Mishnah? Remember Rashi? There is no such thing as Yisr Schora. Yisr Schora is the same as Ein Moser in Peretz V'et L'dam Aretz. The only reason that you can't do business is because you might misuse Shemitah. You might not do Bir. You might... Do you wonder where Rashi might have gotten his inspiration to believe that the Yisr Schora isn't a real thing? The Yisr Schora is just another way of saying that you shouldn't be selling Peretz V'et to someone who might misuse it in one of the many ways that you might misuse it. Where might Rashi have drawn inspiration? Yes. Well, according to Rashi, you read this Mishnah and you're like, huh, you know.
Because I really like Rashi.
But you understand, right? You understand that what you said is essentially Rashi-ifying the entire Mishnah, which is saying, what do you mean? Isser Schora, there's never a fundamental problem with Schora. There's no fundamental problem with Schora. The only problem with Schora is that you might end up eating not kosher or misusing Peretz V'et or misusing Bechor. Misusing in some ways. What?
What if I know they're going to misuse it?
Correct. And what about the flip side? But what's the flip side you should be asking me?
If you know that they won't.
What if you know they won't?
You can't ever be 100% sure.
Really? Really? Are you sure?
Never know.
You sure? Are you sure? Do you want me to give you, I can throw out some halachic issues that modern posts can bring up where you actually can be sure. You want one? Oh, please, you're not thinking. You are thinking so small. Should I think bigger for you?
Sure.
Fine. You own shares in McDonald's.
You can't do that because Jews might come in and buy McDonald's.
Yes, but are you going to touch it? You own shares. What my kesher between you and the food? You're making money off of it, but
a company which helps Jews.
Fine, but that's not what he said. He said you might come to not eat, not go to it if you own or Ramosha has a question. Okay, what if you aren't doing business by selling it? You are. You own a warehouse or you own a truck and you are being paid to provide storage or. But if the concern is that you might eat it, misuse it, right?
That's indirect, though.
Oh, but why is indirect? So you could say indirect is okay because it's not direct. But you could say, well, indirect is not proper, right? Indirect is mutter because the whole problem was you might end up misusing it if you have no contact to it.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Guess what? Post can actually say that, right? They actually say that. But you understand where that logic comes, that leads, right? There's a very straight line from a Rashi-like interpretation of this entire Mishnah, right, to that. Now... but Kobe says, what? Wait a second. That is too reductionist. Really? You're telling me that the only problem... Right. Now, admittedly, what Josh just said, if you want Rashi and you want to run the whole thing, you have a very smooth read of the whole Mishnah. Right? The common denominator behind all of this is that Schora doesn't exist. Right? There's no Yisr Schora. The only Yisr Schora is that you might misuse it in whatever way. Violate his Kedusha, eat not kosher. Whatever misusing means for this is what you're going to do. Right? Kobe comes back and says, wait a second. That doesn't work by Shemitah. That doesn't work by Nevela. That doesn't work by anything. Right? Are you really telling me that everything here is just like some concern that you might eat it? You might not do beer. You might... But there's no intrinsic problematic. There's no intrinsic problem with Shemitah. There's no intrinsic problem with Shkatz and Merum Asim. Oh, very good. So now Josh says, oh, well, maybe the answer is going to be there's multiple issues. Now, what does that help? Right, once you start recognizing that every one of these Yisurim might have many dimensions. So, no, it could be that they all share a certain dimension and that's why they're linked. But that doesn't negate the fact that they also have independent identities. Right, right. And therefore, you could look at it and you could compare it in a certain sense and contrast in others, right? Which would explain the organization, but it wouldn't reduce it to, right? So you could, right? So we now have three just structural ways of reading this Mishnah. One is to say the structure teaches you literally nothing, right? All of these things, there is some problem with selling them, but what the problem is with selling it is different for each one. They're grouped together because the Mishnah is about memorization, and therefore all these things are problematic to sell, so the Mishnah puts them in a list so that you remember that these are problematic to sell, right? In which case, conceptually, you would expect each one to have its own rule, right? Shemitah could be asur for one reason, and Truma for another reason, Bechor for another reason, and Nevela for another reason, and Treif for another reason, and etc. Right? All the way to the other extreme, you could say no. If the Mishnah organizes these together and sandwiches them in between Shemitah, that's because there is some rule, there's some principle that explains everything. They're all unified, right, in some way, shape, or form. Right, Josh gave a possibility, which is essentially, I would suggest, an expansion of Rashi, which is to say, you're right, Yisr Shchora isn't a real thing. Yisr Shchora is a type of gzeira that you won't end up misusing. Perot Shviat, Dmei Shviat. And that's the same in all of these. You shouldn't do it now. So I don't know, right? Severity of the Yisr, random, who knows, right? Well, one second. Then there's obviously a hybrid, which is to say, listen, some of these are connected conceptually, some of these are not. Or these are connected in certain ways, and therefore you can learn something conceptually by comparing one to the other, but they're not all equivalent, right? They share certain similarities, right? But you have to be very careful. You have to focus on the similarities to understand the underlying principle, but you also have to recognize the differences to realize that these aren't identical, right? And that's obviously going to be the messiest approach, right? That doesn't mean it's not right. In fact, it probably is right. But you have to realize that structurally, right, just reading the Mishnah, it jumps out at you. It jumps out at you that you need to recognize that this is the major question you have to ask before you even get into the specific svaras you have, the specific lamdos. You need to say, well, what is the structure of these arguments that I even can make, right? And you're forced to address the, right? This is, remember, you're forced to address the structural issue, right? You're forced to, right? Meaning the Mishnah forces you that when you provide a conceptual explanation, you need to address the organizational, structural problem here, right? You need to, because otherwise, right? It's a very odd set of Mishnayot. It's very, very, very odd.
Right, going back to the idea of kryptonite, is there anything here that was like, that you're not allowed to sell that wasn't included on this list?
Thank you. So Josh says, well, wait a second. Josh has learned well. Josh said that I already told you that one of the ways to study Super Ren is to study kryptonite, right? Still one of the best lines I've ever heard about Lamdas, right? If you want to understand, you have to... What? Oh, you missed this. Oh, so this is an old thing I heard from Ray Tarig when I was in Shan Aleph, which is if you want to understand Superman, you need to study kryptonite. Meaning, if you want to understand a principle, sometimes the best way to do it is to understand the exception. What kills it, right? Because that sheds light on it. So Josh says, well, here, one of the ways I'm going to figure out is to figure out what should have been on this list. Because it sounds like an exhaustive list, but it's not. What should be on this list that's not?
Milk and meat, Meiser.
Oh, so you're not the only one. Very good. Right, everyone asked about that. Is Meiser. Right, is Meiser, right?
It's way more similar to Shemitah than like.
Oh, very good. Is that certain types of Meiser are much more similar and they don't make it on the list. So then you got to figure out why not. Is there a principle here that applies to this list, but it's not a laundry, it's not just a list of everything you can't sell, right? What is going to, very good. But what everyone is asking is what? Is that if, let's go back to the structural issue. If you think this Mishnah is just throwing a bunch of things that are usher, have limitations on what you can sell, because for memory, you would expect everything to be on this list. The second you realize the Mishnah is picking and choosing, right? The second you realize the Mishnah is picking and choosing, you're like, wait.
Well, the thing with Meister was that you could sell it until
the time. Oh, but don't answer the question yet, right? But you, Mordechai, realize the second you say that there are things that could have been in this list that we chose not to. So either you just say, it's a list, but it's exhaustive, but not exhaustive. It's more likely to say no, right? If we chose these six, there's a reason, right? Yeah. So yes, of course, one of the ways that we're going to figure out whether this list is accidental, right, or reflects something fundamental about how these are united is there something on the list that should have been here or could have been here and was chosen not to be? Second, you start seeing that the Mishnah is picking and choosing, you are pushed in the direction, not forced, but pushed quite strongly in the direction of saying there is actually a conceptually organizing principle here. Very good. Okay. Now, then you got to figure out, once you've solved all those problems, then you go and then you say, aha. Then we wrap it up by saying, but the Isser Schar that we just talked about is not universal. Because it gives you these weird cases, okay? So now, again, let's just try to understand the words. What does the Mishnah say? Give me the two exceptions.
Your son.
If you're,
so the
if
first it says...
With intent to keep it from yourself.
Good. So the Mishnah tells you that... V'lo yiyeh l'okeach yirakot sadeh mocher bashuk avohu loket uvino mocher al yado. That the Isser Schora, you cannot buy the vegetables in the field now and sell it in the market, but you can pick it and your son can sell it. Now, well, structurally, someone, before we get to Lamdus, what?
Oh,
lokeach means buy. What's the problem? Very good.
It's
ambiguous.
What?
Oh,
what's ambiguous? What's ambiguous? Is that... Very good. So, this is very odd, right? What would a normal way of structuring this mission have been? Either you are allowed, you cannot be locate peirot besadeh umocher bashuk, right? You can't pick the vegetables in the field and sell them, but your son can. One second. You're 100% right. No, you're 100% right. Right? A normal way of looking at this would have been either, right? Do you understand the oddity of this Mishnah? Right, a simple way of reading this Mishnah would have been, okay, here's two normal ways of doing this. One is you are not allowed to pick the vegetables in the field and sell them in the market, but you can pick them and your son can sell, right? Or you're not allowed to buy them in the field and sell them in the market, but you can buy them and your son can sell them. It's not what it says. It says you can't pick them and sell them. Sorry, you can't buy them and sell them, but you can pick them and have your son sell them. So you could, because there's only one letter difference, you could have just said, change the Girsa. You could change one of, right, one or the other, right? Correct, but the problem is that they're not reflections of each other. We've changed two factors, right? Right, I mean, you've changed two factors, right? Normally, you need to change one factor. They've changed two factors, right?
Also, this is like this case only...
By the way, and who makes a huge deal of this? Who makes a huge deal of that change?
The Gra.
Because
he does all the gears of changing stuff.
Right, the Gra makes a huge deal of that, right? And as you noted, that the Gra is the inverse of Tosfot. What? Why? Because he takes this Girsa seriously, right? Yes, very good. But you understand that he got it from this very, very odd. So we first of all have to figure out what it actually means, right? Before we get to the Lamdus, you got to figure out what did you just say? You changed two factors. Which of them is determinant?
The first one is talking about selling it as business. The second one is doing two shiurim to make sure it's not business.
Oh, so Kobe just says, no, what do you mean? That's the point. You need two shinuyim, otherwise it doesn't work. You could do that. Right? You could do it, but you have to explain it, right? And then, well, if this wasn't confusing... very good. And then Mordechai introduces another problem here, which is, okay, what does the Mishnah mean? Does it mean... One second. Mordechai raises the question, which is, wait a second. Do you mean that you can do this if it's unintentional? Or even if it's intentional, right? Meaning, can you pick and then, oh, I was planning on eating it, but my son is going to go sell it?
Oh, yeah,
right?
No, it does sound like this by accident.
Well, good. Very good. So what is, how are we going to figure out, good, Mordechai, how are we going to figure out, how are we going to figure out whether the Mishnah is talking about something intentional or not intentional?
This is Al Yado.
Very good. One hint is going to be Al Yado, right? Which is, what does Al Yado mean? So through him. Does through him literally mean through him, in which case it clearly is intentional? Because very good. Is it even mutter with shliach? And then you'll say, wait a second. It's mutter if I'm a shliach? You're telling me? Wait. Are you telling me? Right? So if that's what it means, then you're telling me, wait, there is something that is usher for me to do, but is mutter for me to arrange from beginning to end. Which, and David says, it's definitely not saying that. However, as you all know, as I've said, what's the line again from Reish Achdar? One man's reductio ad absurdum is another man's in hachinami, right? Which is, David says, that can't be. And guess what? I would have been with you. And yet, some people say, nope, that's exactly what it means. It's usher, it's terrible, unless you appoint someone else to do it, in which case, it's fine. And then you got to say, oh, very good. And then David says, really? How in the name, right? David, I'm with you, right? David says, really? You are telling me that that's okay? You mean I can appoint someone? Great! I have an idea.
The problem is having a middleman. That's what you're talking about.
Okay, good.
Having a middleman is a problem. Doing it by yourself.
No, but you're allowed to have your son do it.
No, but not as a middleman. It's through you. It's like the first case that says you can't buy in the field and sell it. Just
okay.
Like you can't be the middleman.
Now there's one more, but there's one more thing. There's one more hint. How else are we going to figure out?
Other case.
What other case? Very good. Josh says, wait a second. You know how we can solve it? Is the next line in the Mishnah. Because what does the next line in the Mishnah say? That you, if you buy it, then what can you do? If you buy it, if you take it to eat, and then you have leftover, you can sell. So
buy it to eat or take it to eat?
Take it to eat. Sorry, take it to eat, right?
It says lakach.
Well, okay, you're right, lakach. You took, you bought, who knows what that means, right? And then what? Very good, yeah, exactly. And then you'll tell me, wait a second, so what's the problem? Guys, what's the problem? What does that imply?
What does the last line imply about this immediately previous case?
That it's not intention.
Yeah, that the previous case was intentional,
right? Right? Meaning if it's saying, right, if I pick and I happen to have leftover, then I'm going to let it sell. But that implies that the previous case, right, in this, the last case, I didn't have intention to sell, I had intention to eat. And that's what makes it mutter. But that implies that, what? That in the case of your son, you actually had intent to pick to sell it. And for some reason... That's mutter. Oh, and now you wonder where. Very good. And now you wonder where.
This entire Mishnah.
Oh, very good. So now you realize that. Wait a second. So wait. I want to take a step back for a second. So now do you realize that I told you at the beginning of the year, my goal by the end of the year is that when you read a Mishnah, you read a Gemara, you may not know the names to attach to it, but you will understand how most, if not all, the positions, the major positions we've shown him, reach the Svara they do looking at the Gemara. Now, we just have that. Why? Because one oddity of this whole Mishnah is the fact that we sort of indiscriminately talk about Shemitah, Truma, Bechor, Shkatzim, Ramasim. So Josh came up with a svara that said, because all of this is really about preventing you from doing the wrong thing. Oh, I just stumbled into Rashi's view of svara, right? Then we get to the last lines, and it says, you can intentionally it sounds like you can intentionally pick it as long as someone else is going to sell it. But if you pick it, plenty. So then even you could sell it, right? And then you say, aha, because the only problem is when you pick it on the intention to sell.
And now you just fell into Toast Mode,
right? You just fell into Toast Mode, who said that.
Or maybe the first line of the Pelo Yeh Lekach is the Chazanish.
Why not both?
Or why not both? Very good.
Maybe the first line of Pelo Yeh Lekach Yerakos is talking about why you can't have a shift, why that was right into Toast Mode. Maybe in the case of a shech,
right, so that has to, right, you have to figure out, is it really shleach? Why is your son doing it? Is it doing it for you? Is it really doing it on behalf?
Maybe the first case, maybe the first case shleach. Also,
oh, wait a second. Now David just said a magic word, and David said, wait a second, maybe the key here is shinui. Shinui, okay, good. Someone tell me why shinui matters. When does shinui ever matter?
With how we relate to the object.
Oh, good. So one possibility is that sometimes shinui is important because... Good, so let's think about it. Let's say that what's going on here is a shinui. Very good. Why does shinui matter? So sometimes shinui matter... Right? Tell me, in halacha, when do shinois matter? What do they do? What does a shinoi accomplish?
It's muksa.
Good. Why does it solve the problem?
Because then you're not actually interacting with it in a normal way that you would have.
And therefore what?
It won't lead you to do anything actually awesome.
Oh, so some... Very good. So sometimes shinoi helps because the whole isser to begin with is a reminder to not be led down a path which is usser. Right? In such a case, what does the shinui do? It's just a reminder. And then, does it need to be a very significant shinui?
No.
Not particularly, right? So it could be that if we follow the Rashi line, right, that the whole problem here is just you might be led to doing something else, or you say, oh, shinui, that makes sense, because you do a shinui, it'll prevent any problems, right? Yeah. But Mordechai says something else before that, which is, no, sometimes that's not why you do a shinui. And Shabbos, when you have a shinui, right, or what we call kalachar yad, it goes from being a daraisa to being a derabanan. Why?
Because it's not an actual daraisa.
Because the daraisa is to do it normally, and if you do it abnormally, it's still problematic derabanan, but it's just not the same action. Right? If that's the case, then why might shinui change it? Because shinui does it, very good. It's not sora, by which we mean it's not the type of sora which is usur. That the shinui actually changes its essence. So then you got to explain to me why, right? Why does this? Because then, right? If it's stama shinui, so it's a reminder. So then, okay, I do it through a shleach. Okay, I mean that's weird. So fine, but if it's shinui makes it mutter because it changes the essence of shor, you got to ask. Wait, you mean appointing a shleach is less businesslike? Oh, very good. Very good. And then it might explain a shita not like Rashi. Very good. Very good.
Wait, Rebbe, would you be able to read this, whatever, however we explain the Bolian Lokath case as these few halachas only apply to Shvias as opposed to the rest of the Schora cases that we just mentioned before?
Probably, yeah. No, probably that line only applies to Shemitah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what else does it mean? You can't pick a toad.
No,
out of the, I mean,
no, but
what does it mean?
Maybe, for example, it'd be allowed to do a shinoi when you sell. Maybe you'd be allowed to do a shinoi when you sell something else.
Oh, so you could say that there'll be a parallel by the other ones. 100% yeah. There could be a parallel, right? But obviously, that particular iteration of
it.
No, obviously. No, for sure. Right?
The difference is when you go into a marketplace, right, and you're buying, like, these things, it's very clear that your intention to the shinoi, right, you're relating to it as, like, your dream to be sold. But when you're going and you're collecting it yourself, and then afterwards you give it to your son, you're not relating it as produce to be sold. You're relating it as produce to stock.
Right. So exactly as David says, it might be that it changes perspective, right? Now, why does it change perspective is something we're going to have to figure out in what way. Now, let's just... Can we have a few more minutes? Or maybe not.
It's weird. Yeah. And it should also apply only in certain scenarios, because if your son is part of a family business, then that doesn't really make much of a difference, does it?
Oh, very good. So Mordechai says, well, maybe there's a difference, right? Oh, so he says, what type of son is it, right? Very good. You know who asked that question? Mordechai, you know who asked that question? You know who addressed that question, essentially? The Yerushalmi. Because Yerushalmi says, Yerushalmi is going to bring up a case which is going to address exactly your question, which is, what about a partnership? What about a partnership? Very good, because exactly Mordechai's question, which is, what is your relationship to your son, such that it brings about the perspective change that David says? Well, is it because your son is not your normal business partner? What if he was? Right? Is it simply the fact you just need someone else to do it? Or is it because your son is specifically not part of your business relationship, right, that it helps? But let's say you had a business relationship, you had a partnership, so then you can't tell me, what, my business partner does it on my behalf and now suddenly it's not business? Right? That's the Yerushalmi implicitly addresses. Very good. Now, okay. We still haven't finished all the Mishnayot here. We haven't gotten past the Mishnah yet. But very quickly, because I know you have the next year, but let me just read it once. Right? So then the Mishnah brings a parallel case by Bechor, which is, you bought a Bechor for your son's, for a party for your son, and you have extra, you're allowed to sell it. Okay, we're just going to have to figure out what's the parallel, because now we have these parallels about, well, right, what do we have a parallel now where it's usher to engage in business l'chadchila, but if you weren't engaging in business or you weren't engaging in problematic business, then you're allowed to sell it off. You got to figure out, are those practically connected? Are they fundamentally connected, right? And then, right, the Mishnah, you know what? I'm not going to rush it, because the Mishnahs are really important. Just reading the Mishnah is important. Because then we move a transition in this. Remember, these are four Mishnah, and what we have is Mishnah. The next Mishnah is, then it transitions to what? You got to the end of the Mishnah? If you're a fisherman, and you happen to capture not kosher fish, you can sell it, which is parallel to doing business kavua in Shemitah or not. So what we have to do, next time we'll continue reading the Mishnah. I don't know. Okay, good.